of us have faced tremendous amount of change in our life. The circumstances of this global pandemic have put in our minds that we need to deal fast with the urgent, if not for survival. Change is then perceived as difficult. But what if all of that is just making us stronger? Today, in Unexpected Data, you will hear the story of a guest that believes in each of us, provide us a step-by-step guidance and all the keys to succeed in tech.
My name is Suzanne Tedrick, and I am the author of Women of Color in Tech.
What Suzanne didn't say is that she's a cloud technical specialist and advises many big corporations. She had also been nominated and won multiple titles in the area of information technology. She's fiercely committed to community service and to increase participation of women and people of color in tech. I'm then so honored to have her with us and that we got to know her. Her book, Woman of Color in Tech, is based on her personal experience transitioning in tech. This book has the intent to guide more women to pursue a tech career. The frank, factual, and extensively gathered information she presents is very helpful for anybody that is willing to be informed. With a background that some could claim as non-typical, Suzanne Tedrick has been nurturing her spark for technology since her childhood.
When I was really young, my father really was into technology himself and consumer electronics. And, you know, he'd buy computers, he'd buy all kinds of, you know, components. And I was always fascinated by what he was bringing in, the blinking lights, the sounds. And whenever he brought a new gadget home, I'd stay up until like midnight or so, like just playing around with it. Sometimes I took the passion too far and I would open said thing up just to see how it would work. My father, he had that wonder and that excitement about technology as well. And it was very infectious. Like, I just caught it and, you know, it was something that we were able to bond over. You know, growing up in my household, like, we were probably the two biggest geeks in the house, and we were just like, what are you guys doing? But it always just really, really fascinated me, and you know, it's something that I've, you know, enjoyed learning more about as time's gone on.
This family fascination for technology built up both the wonder and excitement of being able to do more. It also strengthened even more the family relationship. But circumstances of life can change your initial plan.
It's a little bit of many different things. So there were definitely some personal circumstances here within my household that unfortunately it was more of an issue of surviving, kind of making sure that the house was afloat. Yeah, you know, speaking very candidly, my mother had been ill for the better part of two decades, diagnosed with brain tumors. You know, it took a toll, you know, on all of us, because going in and out of the hospital, making sure that she has her medication, and, you know, my dad being the only breadwinner at one point. And by the time I got older, you know, I was kind of in this survival mindset. Like, what do I do just to make sure that food's on the table? You know, what do I do to make sure that, you know, my family and everything is provided for? So there's that. And then, honestly, I didn't believe at the time that I could be successful. I didn't realize it at first, but I noticed that throughout my academic and then, you know, my career, the subtle little biases that kind of come in into your head that kind of reinforce some perhaps negative thoughts about what you're able to do. At one point when I was in seventh grade, like, I had a very harsh math teacher, like, okay, maybe I'm not good at math. And then I had the belief that in order to be successful in tech, you had to be like a student in math. And I'm like, I am not an A student in math. And it got to a point where I had to ask myself, the career path that I was on was really fulfilling me and serving what I needed. Because while the regular jobs that I was getting paid, I was not very engaged with my work. I was really unhappy. And, you know, I just really didn't want that to be, for however much longer my working years are, I just didn't want to be unfulfilled. So I finally just said, okay, like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to try this. And very surprisingly, I'm here. So I'm happy with that.
So you too, if you are willing to take on this challenge to start in tech, know that being good in math is not mandatory. Technology is everywhere. A large list of opportunities in business analysis, consulting, product and project management, user experience design, and data science is open to you. What counts? Your ability to solve a problem, including being customer-oriented and simply being able to tell a story. From my side, I was led to data science because I have the passion for interpreting the data, the passion for knowing better the people behind and to make their life better.
When you go into school, it's a place to try on different opportunities, to try new things. And I think the spark, the passion, the interest should always be cultivated versus downplayed, like kind of saying, oh, you are part of a gender that's constantly told that you can't do certain things. Whether you realize it or not, you just kind of hold those beliefs as you go through life. I can only imagine like how many great women technologists and data scientists would have been here if they had just gotten that encouragement and the freedom and the grace to fail, but to nurture and to, you know, have them grow, because you never know where it's going to lead. There are things that I bring to the table because of my natural curiosity and my, you know, want to help people, and just like your passion for like wanting to have, you know, dig deep into the meaning of data to our society. Like, that's amazing. My wish and hope is that for many academic institutions that they kind of have this mind shift in terms of, don't think about the grade. The grade is indicative of a certain thing, but not necessarily indicative of what your success will be in this path.
It has been proven that your life experience and your uniqueness are bringing great values to the table. McKinsey shows that we could all have $12 trillion in additional GDP if gender gap is narrowed by 2025. So respecting and appreciating differences and supporting each individual with the good conditions to achieve their full potential are prerequisites to a better economy. And in this time of COVID-19, the business case of diversity and inclusion is stronger than ever. Having an homogeneous team may lead to a certain level of bias, which can potentially marginalize or historically marginalize a certain population of people.
If you have no concept of my life or my experiences or what it's like to be a certain group in society, I can't really expect you to, you know, be in my shoes completely, meaning like I'm not expecting you to understand at all. And so for teams, unfortunately, if it's just this very homogenized team, I'm not going to expect diversity in that, because like you're all alike, you all have shared experiences, you all have certain biases altogether. And so to think that anything that isn't going to be a reflection of your thoughts and your biases is going to come out of that is a very tall order. I couldn't imagine that. So it's crucial to get different people in the room when we're building machine learning models to make sure that you're checking yourself and balancing what the needs are. Otherwise, you're just going to have that continue over and over and over again. I think the design principles that are being set forth from the OpenAI standards as well as the Future of Life organization, they really are at heart talking about let's make tools that are good for everybody, not just a handful of people.
But let me get it right. Change is for sure hard, and especially hard when you start from scratch. But be aware that you are not alone.
It was not easy. So first and foremost was my family. I can't thank them enough because I know that it was very difficult for the many years that I went back to school and I was doing all this volunteering and I was, you know, missing family functions. I know it wasn't easy on them, and I know there were times where I was not pleasant to be around. So more specifically my husband, because I'm just like, I don't know, like, you haven't thrown me out a window yet. That's awesome. And then it was the network that I built. One of the things that I talked about in my book was that sometimes that support may not necessarily be inherently built in the community that you have around you. And you know, for as helpful as some people were, a lot of people were like, I don't understand what you're doing. Like, I don't even know why you're doing this. Like, why on earth would you want to change careers? You have a good career, you have a good life. Like, why would you want to upend that? So I stress the point of making a network, because those are the people that are probably going to understand you a little better and your career goals a lot more than some other people.
So whatever you want to do, you have to be your first and biggest advocate. Because you know yourself well, you know where you want to go, and certainly and mostly, you know what you need. So whatever, extrovert or introvert, take the time to prepare yourself. See your confidence, see your abilities.
That's hard. That was probably the hardest thing that I had to learn, because I myself am just like, I don't want to ask. But in order for you to advance in your career or wherever you're trying to go, you have to be able to find that voice somehow. It doesn't have to be the loudest voice. It doesn't have to be the high energy extrovert's voice, but you have to find your authentic self and find the courage within yourself to say, okay, this is what I need.
Do you like the content of this show? If you think that you have benefited from it, help me continue giving awareness about data in your daily life. How to do that? It is simple. Become a patron and give the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts, so others like you can get to know us too. Now back to the show.
And it comes with time. It's not something that just happens, and sometimes you're not going to always be successful. The key being that you always want to try to make those asks. Believe in yourself, believe in your confidence, your skills and abilities, and just don't stop trying. You know, don't stop asking for those things that you need.
So don't be afraid to seek for help and guidance. A mentor, meaning a person who has experienced all the things that you go through, can provide you a different perspective on how to approach a problem, or even suggest resources that you may not have been aware of. Suzanne highlights that sometimes what we need is a sponsor. That means someone that will publicly advocate on your behalf, inside and outside of your organization. Someone that can create opportunities for you. Someone that especially take on a reputation risk when advocating for you. This person is taking this reputation risk because he, she, they believe that you will excel in this specific opportunity. And when things get tough, you can find allies. Those are the people that have the same values as you and can help amplify your message and even increase the chances that your message will be heard. Woman of Color has definitely taught me a lot. It is my go-to book for references on how to tackle certain situations and how to plan my professional development. So wherever you are in your career, in tech or not, I definitely urge you to buy this book. men or people that are not of color. Take this book to understand what others are experiencing. And be bold to say loudly that you don't cope with exclusion behaviors.
There are plenty of people and places that are guilty of just using diversity and inclusion as a marketing and recruiting tool. And that's really unfortunate because we're wise to it. We know what's going on. We know that it's just for show. In the reality, you're not doing anything to actually be diverse or inclusive. Like, you're just, you're checking off a box.
Because each of us is a leader. We are each of us able to open the discussion of inclusion and diversity. We can each of us proactively help each other.
Exactly. It's incumbent on everyone to do that in their way. The book, I even said, like, it doesn't take a grand gesture to help. It's the littlest things, like sharing information about free job training, or, hey, I'll look at your resume, or I'll introduce you to this recruiter at this tech company. It's all of this little stuff that goes on day to day that helps in the long run.
If you have more time, become a mentor like Susan does.
I'm not responsible for managing people's careers, but through mentoring and through doing classes for people, I'm encouraging them to think about technical careers, but I'm also encouraging them that people of color can be successful technology careers. So even if you're not someone that has a position of power or authority, so to speak, we all have ways that we can contribute to making things more inclusive and diverse than we think. You have to figure out what action looks like for you individually, what you're able to do, what you think you're able to contribute, and then just go out and do it. It's going to take everyone's effort to increase the numbers from where they are.
In our show notes, you can find a list of associations that support women and data aficionados to get started. You can ask there all the questions without any judgment, because no question is stupid. If you don't understand something, it is surely that it was not well explained. We are today empowered with data. So help the organization understand the magnitude of the inclusion and diversity problem.
The beauty about data is that, you know, you really can't argue with it. It is what it is. You can interpret what you'd like, but here you go. It's important to keep having data points that illustrate this point of both the narrative of how this is a continuing problem. Okay, well, how many of the people of color did I hire actually stay after 2 years? How many stayed after 3 years? How many stayed after 5 years? Am I really listening to them? Are they happy and engaged? Do they actually have any authority and agency to do their job? Or did you just put this person in for optics? But also talking about the successes, like what happens when you have diverse teams and diverse groups. There's actually a wonderful data survey that was done by Data is Beautiful, and it showed the top 50 technology companies and the total population of people that worked in their organization. And it also showed the number of women that were there. So, you know, making that comparison, and in some places it looked awesome, and in other places it looked bad. And it also showed, like, from year to year, did that number increase? Did that number decrease? And in some cases, it decreased by a lot. So that in and of itself was alarming. But then taking it a step further, they showed the number of people of color that were women working at these organizations. And when you saw the data points for that, as well as the negative migration that was occurring in many of these places, I mean, you just really couldn't ignore it at that point. There's, like, clearly something's going on here, and it's not just Facebook or Google. It's the top 50 technology companies where this is happening. These data points are incredibly important to bring to people to help them to understand the magnitude of this. So I think data scientists are really good at telling stories through their data points, and they're integral.
So data scientists, be the voice of those people that can't be heard. We are for sure able to bring business and ethical advancement and innovation.
I think what's happening in society now with the larger dialogue about race in the world, I think now people are starting to say, no, we can't do this anymore. This is not okay. We need to have more deeper discussions and deeper dialogues and action versus, you know, pretty words and value statements. And I think what's great is that people are holding these companies accountable. Like on social media, they've actually called for tech companies to release the data of how many people of color do you have working in your organization? How many of those people of color are in technical professions? How many of them are in managerial positions? It's making people uncomfortable because it's making them face some harsh truths that perhaps your diversity and inclusion program is not as good as you think it is. And it's time for you to make some changes.
While in the US, tracking ethnical data, like identifying people of color, is legal, in the EU, it seems that we are limited to citizenship data. So good or not? What is your opinion when it comes to solve inclusion and diversity issue? For Suzanne, it is a missed opportunity.
So I'll be completely candid. I'm not really sure in terms of Europe what the demographics are for most tech companies. I would have to assume that there are probably the same challenges in terms of homogenous teams and struggling to get diversity and inclusion within these organizations. So I think it's really hard to address, you know, that issue without knowing where things stand and where things are. So I feel like it's a missed opportunity to like really dig down and say, okay, you know, this is where I need to make changes. I can see on the flip side of it that for some organizations, they may want to avoid having the appearance of like catering to one demographic versus another. But if we're talking about diversity and inclusion and making things more inclusive for everyone, I feel like it almost need to have that information in order to have the subsequent conversations that come after it.
One thing is for sure, we are in the most exciting period of the data history. The legal and ethical framework of data is now being built. And as Susan Tedrick says it, growth and comfort don't coexist.
Technology is a tool that can really not only solve a lot of society's issues and ills, it's also industry or a place where people can have tremendous opportunity in terms of what they would like to pursue in their lives. There's no limit in what they can do. And, you know, data in particular, even for statistics that perhaps are negative or, you know, show that perhaps there's an area where it needs improvement, there's still opportunity there, you know, in that information, ways for that we can make life better, not only for ourselves, but for other people.
I would like to thank Susan Tedrick for her time and her commitment to increase participation of women and people of color in STEAM. Thanks, Susan, also for reminding us our uniqueness and the importance and joy of giving back. Find the list of associations that can support you on unexpecteddata.com. And if you would like to listen to more, find us on your favorite podcast platform. Help us grow this show by giving us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. If you have a story that you would like to share, reach out to us at hello@unexpecteddata.com. We will read you and we will answer you. Stay curious and challenge your environment. Talk to you soon.